probably go away anyways.
Call the tax committee to order. Members, we've got two bills this morning before session. Senate file 1158, and I'll give the gavel over to Senator Skoy, because these are both mine.
Senator Bach.
So Senator Skoy had moved Senate file 1158. Members, this is a bill relative to contributions that are received by a nonprofit and the corresponding audit that's required. Under current law of a nonprofit, this actually was brought to me by a fire department up in my district, who I believe is going to get a donation of a firebolt. And the way the current law works, if they receive more than $350,000 in a donation in a year, it automatically triggers an audit to the Attorney General's office. So this raises the threshold for a nonprofit if they receive up to $750,000. The threshold years ago was $100,000, and then in the 90s it went up to, I believe, the $350,000 we currently have in law. This raises it up to $750,000. And this went through the local government committee, and see the CPAs are here. They actually testified in support of it. These audits are more and more costly, and so we felt looking at the threshold was worth doing. So the nonprofits testified in support of it in the local government committee, as did the CPAs. So members, what there is, what this bill raised was the whole issue of audits as it relates to charitable gambling, because that is not what this bill is. But Tom Baird, who runs the Gambling Control Board, when they saw this bill, got together with the Department of Revenue and started a discussion about, well, maybe we should take a look at the threshold and some of the auditing requirements as it relates to charitable gaming organizations. So the Gambling Control Board and the Department of Revenue have been having, along with the charitable gambling industry, have had some meetings to look at an amendment to this that would make some changes in the audits that are required to go to the Department of Revenue for charitable organizations. So there is an amendment that, if we get that out, maybe we'll have the Gambling Control Board come up. And is somebody from Revenue here that wants to speak to it? Or they might all be over in the House Tax Committee. But I do believe this is language that the department has worked out with the Gambling Control Board and the interested parties. And Ms. Nelson is here from the Gambling Control Board. Mr. Barrett was unavailable today. He was here, if you remember, last week, and when we couldn't get to the bill. So if you don't want to come up and speak to the discussions that have gone on and tell us what the amendment does, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shire.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to ask Senator Bach, what's a firebolt?
Yeah.
Senator Bach.
On the state's larger lakes.
Bolt. Oh, I thought you said bolt.
Oh,
yeah, me too.
On the state's larger lakes, where there's a lot of remote properties that there's no road access to, some of the fire departments have a bolt that actually is equipped with all the pumps.
Gotcha. I understand.
I got up early enough that my voice should be. I usually enunciate better than that.
If it were just me, Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't be worried, but, you know, we've got.
That's why I'm concerned. It isn't just you.
Ms. Nelson.
Yes.
The A2 amendment.
Yes.
Would you want to walk us through what the A2 amendment does?
Yes, it raises the threshold for audits of just the gambling portion of money for an organization. That was set back in 2001. It was set at $300,000, a full audit, and a financial review was required if the total gross receipts were between $150,000 and $300,000. And what this amendment does is it removes the requirement for the financial review and raises the threshold for the audit requirement from $300,000 to $500,000. So organizations would, about half of the organizations that are licensed for lawful gambling, would still be required to have an audit. And in its place, every organization that's licensed would have to submit a certified physical inventory once a year, and the Department of Revenue would compare that inventory with what the distributors have told them that has been sold to those organizations to make sure that the inventory is correct. They would also have to do a cash count of all their, what we call cash banks, the money that they have to pay out winners in all the pull tab and bingo and paddle wheel games. So that's the basic part of it.
And Ms. Nelson, how many of the, I don't know if you said it or I didn't hear it, how many percent of the organizations would be under this threshold?
About 50%.
About half of them.
Yes. And the Gambling Control Board does a full, we don't call them audit, but a full review financially and also of the conduct of all of the organizations. Right now we're at every 2 years. We look at the, everything. And this, again, is the gross income. So about the average net income for organizations under 500,000 and between 150 and 500 is about $72,000 for those 400 that would no longer require.
And Ms. Nelson, did I hear you say that the department would still do that every other year full review?
The Gambling Control Board would continue doing our reviews, right? And also the Department of Revenue also does audits on organizations, random audits, depending, like we do too, on tips or problems or theft or those types of things. And they could also, the Commissioner of Revenue could require an audit if there were late tax reports filed or for any other reason that they weren't following the Department of Revenue's or our requirements to.
Questions, members? Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Nelson, I'm curious. I mean, there seem to be a lot of problems with theft and swindle in a lot of types of organizations. I know the audits are costly. Where do you usually catch when somebody's done something wrong, when somebody's...
How do we
money.
Usually?
Yes, is it from these audits or is it from that biannual review?
Mostly it's from the compliance review, what the Gambling Control Board does. We don't get a copy of the audit. We can request it from the organization when we do a review and look at it. But most of the time it's actually looking at the conduct of the organization and physically being out there and counting the tickets and making sure that they're not fraudulently claiming something on their tax report. Usually it's the compliance people that find the errors.
So, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I remember the state auditor said a few months ago that she said for the local government audits that they've been doing that every time, most of the time when they find somebody embezzling money, it was related to compulsive gambling, and I don't know that charitable gambling operations are the most common form of compulsive gambling problems, but in effect, your office is confident that this is not loosening anything in a way. This is saving administrative costs to the charities, but not going to cost any, not more theft going to sneak under the radar somehow.
Ms. Right. Nelson,
excuse me. Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, yes, that revenue is also confident with this figure. Because we have a lot of eyes out there already, this is like the third, they report monthly to the Department of Revenue and to the Gambling Control Board, and then we're also out there and reviewing things monthly as well as every other year.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, my question isn't for Ms. Nelson. I'm sorry. So it's for Senator Bach.
Well, Ms. Cadoon is here, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if she wants to speak on behalf of the department or.
Ms. Cadoon?
And
members, I'll just say it again. This wasn't my initiative to put this amendment on here. When the Gambling Control Board saw this, they thought they could streamline some of the accounting functions that are happening. So they went to me when we involved the Department of Revenue, and I think we've come up with probably a better bill than we had initially introduced.
Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon with the Department of Revenue. I just wanted to support that statement that the Department of Revenue did work with the Charitable Gaming Board on this language, and we are supportive of this.
Thank you. Anything else? Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach or perhaps Ms. Cadoon, I assume that the department also gets statements, well, they get returns in any case from these charitable organizations. I assume they're 501c3 kinds of organizations. I'm talking about the original bill language. They're just, this isn't charitable gambling organizations. This is some other kind of charitable organization. Mr. Chairman, I'm talking about your original bill.
The original bill is nonprofits.
It's nonprofits. So they're called charitable organizations here in the, and I assume, I don't know how many organizations give statements, financial statements, to the Attorney General. I understand the connection here, right. But I assume they also file returns, so the Department of Revenue sees something from them.
I don't know what the department gets actually from nonprofits, like a fire department.
Ms. Cadoon
Mr.
or
Chair,
Ms.
Chair, members of the committee, I apologize. I'm definitely not an expert in this area. I can certainly get that information for the committee, though.
I can.
Do you know the answer?
I can, yeah. Mr. Chair.
Ms. Nelson.
I can say that every month, every organization that's licensed for lawful gambling has to report to the Department of Revenue all income from all forms of gambling, all prizes, all expenses, and all donations. They also report to the Gambling Control Board every entity that receives a donation and the amount, and those are reviewed monthly.
So Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, then, the charitable organizations are the people receiving the results of perhaps the money for the fire bolt boat was raised through charitable gambling, perhaps. I mean, it could be, could have been, maybe wasn't, but that some organization has donated.
The initial bill was the nonprofit, because they received a gift or donation, has an audit required to be sent to the Attorney General's office. And what the bill's been greatly expanded by bringing in the charitable gambling organizations relative to their audit, which goes to the Department of Revenue, not to the Attorney General's office.
Okay. Maybe I should just look, Mr. Chairman, at Chapter 309 and see. I was just trying to get an idea of what the Department of Revenue. I have no quarrel with the bill. I think it's, you know,
Senator
good to do.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I was late. I think this is a really good compromise for not only the level of reporting, but at first we had thought maybe the level of reporting could be for everyone raising it, the threshold, but the audits that go to the Department of Revenue and the Attorney General, as I'm sure you've been discussing, are quite different. But that this approach that was taken here was very acceptable to the Gambling Control Board and also answered some issues that the Department of Revenue had, because they really did want that reporting to continue. And the big issue is not a certified audit. It is the issue of the certified inventory and the cash counts reports, that those are what will make the difference to the Department of Revenue rather than a certified audit.
I think, Senator Rest, that Senator Scheid's question has to do with the original bill, not the amendment, which is dealing with the Attorney General.
Right.
And charitable contributions.
The amendment is to bring in, as Senator Bach said, to expand the bill, but to be bringing in the Department of Revenue.
Excuse me, Senator Bach moved the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Anything else, members, on Senate File 1158 as amended? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, the only thing I'm unclear of is this is a fire department, but they created a nonprofit to accept the boat. Or how does it work up there? I mean, we're talking about a nonprofit, and I picture it'd be a public fire department.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, the fire department is a 501c3.
Okay. The department.
Is it, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, is that common? I mean, are there a lot of small departments that are?
I'd have to ask the department, but I believe it is. But the department's all over in the House, unfortunately.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I'd be curious to know sometime. We don't need to know right now, but I just.
Well, Senator Marty, we'll get the department and get some answers and have them distributed to the committee.
Thanks.
Anything else? Senator Bach, laying Senate File 1158 over for possible inclusion?
Yep, that's my plan, Mr. Chairman.
Chair, lay Senate File 1158 over for possible inclusion. Senator Bach, Senate File 282.
Mr. Chairman, this is a shorter bill, but not everybody likes this one. Senate File 282 is the idea for the bill came out of legislation in New York that was then challenged, and the state prevailed at the district court level, and I believe it's being appealed, and there are a number of states that are considering doing legislation similar to what New York did. And probably the easiest way for me to explain it is to explain how it works. The issue is when does a company have tax nexus with Minnesota for the purposes of collecting sales tax? The marketplace is changing. We all realize that how e-commerce is growing. It's growing exponentially, and businesses are using more and more online sales as a way to market their products. So to explain the way it works, a company that doesn't have bricks and mortar in Minnesota, and there are a number of these very large companies that sell over the internet that don't actually have bricks and mortar in the state, but what they often do have is a sales force that goes out and solicits Minnesota businesses to put a link on their website. So a business in Minnesota that has a presence here, has employees, and does business in Minnesota will have a link on one of these e-commerce websites, so that if you're a shopper and you go to one of these big websites to purchase something, you can click on a Minnesota company. And when you do that and you make your purchase there, under current law, you're not subject to pay Minnesota sales tax, even though you're actually going to the website of a Minnesota company that has a link on the website. So there are hundreds and hundreds and a growing number of businesses that have a physical presence here that have put their website out on other sites, and sales tax is not getting collected. So the argument the bill makes is that if you have agents or consultants or somebody that's out soliciting Minnesota businesses to put the Minnesota businesses link on the website, that creates nexus. That means you have a presence here because you're soliciting a transaction between your company and the company that you actually originally go to. And it's hard to, you know, when I want to use names, but we all know there are a number of these large e-commerce businesses that Minnesota businesses and others put links to. And the argument of the bill is that if you're the e-commerce company and you're out entering into contracts with Minnesota businesses, then that establishes a physical presence in the state for sales tax purposes. I'm not sure I have that exactly right. You could also go to a Minnesota company. Go to a Minnesota company that has a presence here, go to their website, and then click on the company that doesn't have bricks and mortar here and make the purchase that way. So in either event, there is a contractual relationship between the Minnesota company with bricks and mortars here and the one that you go to make the purchase. And the argument is that contract between those two businesses should create nexus for tax purposes.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Senator Bachman, are we taxing the Minnesota corporation or the New York corporation?
Senator Bachman.
No, the only reference to New York is New York has a law like this.
Oh, so then my question is, are we...
The argument is the company that doesn't have bricks and mortars here, we would argue does have a presence here because they're entering into contracts with Minnesota companies, which, and I forget the name of the... Is it Scripto case?
Yeah, I...
Is the case precedent, Supreme Court decision, that defines that physical presence can be more than just bricks and mortar. It can be having a sales force here or agents here is also creates a physical presence for tax purposes.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Johnson, I think the individual would pay the tax. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the shopping website is who we're taxing.
Senator Bach. All we're saying is that the individual who makes the purchase, that whoever made the sale has an obligation to collect the sales tax from the individual.
Boy, that's going to be tough.
No different than if you went to some Minnesota business here and made a purchase, you would pay sales tax. But if you bought it online, directly from their website, you would pay sales tax. But if you use another website to go through, somehow the way the law is currently defined, there's not an obligation for that other party who doesn't have the bricks and mortar here to collect the sales tax.
Senator Rest.
Senator Baca, I support your bill, but I think it has a lot of landmines in it, and what I understood is that the another online sales company, because of the New York law, has now doesn't sell in New York. Period. They just won't. And that the same thing may start. Amazon is, I mean, maybe it's an idle threat, but they're considering doing the same thing, lacking a federal law to the contrary, which, of course, is what we all hope would happen, rather than these individual state law in this whole complex area of taxing internet sales or... Wisconsin used to be really opposed to it, of course, but then with Land's End, they have true nexus because they have stores here. And so there's not the objection anymore. But and I know you know this, it's a risk to move in this direction by ourselves, even if New York is doing it.
Well, Senator Bach, why don't you respond, and then we'll get to the testifiers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the issue is, let's use the example again. I go to a Minnesota company's website, and they have a contract with somebody who doesn't have a physical presence here. There's a contractual relationship between the Minnesota company and the company that doesn't have bricks and mortar here. Contractual relationship. The company who is not domiciled here then sells something, and I, as a Minnesota business, get a commission. I get a commission for that transaction because there's a contract between the Minnesota company and the company who doesn't have a presence here that then allows the Minnesota company to get a commission of the sale. And Senator Rest, you're right. This is a huge growing problem, and it's unfortunate that they can't get their arms around this in Washington, D.C., but... I think we have to try.
Mr. Chairman.
And maybe if this starts to happen in more states, it'll stimulate some additional conversation in Washington, D.C.
Okay, before the test, Senator
Scheid. I'm sorry, but Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this. I think when I go to get my email, my internet provider has a lot of advertising. Is that the kind of thing you're thinking of? I have no idea. I mean, if I went to, you know, 3M's website, I'm not likely to see one of these, or am I? Is it just a company?
I don't know if 3M or 3M actually retails to the public, but a Minnesota company that retails to the public here enters into an agreement with a company that is not domiciled in Minnesota, and the Minnesota company then arguably is a sales agent. They're a sales agent because they get a commission. They're a sales agent for the company that does not have bricks and mortar here because they get a commission on the sale.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I get it. Mr. Chairman, I get it. I think, I mean, if Target or Walmart or somebody had a website and then you could order from Amazon
on their website.
Gotcha. I get it.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scheid. And Senator Bach, we've been having these conversations for years, and Senator Rust, as you well know, it's going to be the regulation that's going to be the problem. How do you regulate? How do you collect? How do you target these sales, actually make people pay up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the testimony probably will shed more light on this when we actually hear from Minnesota businesses that have much more firsthand understanding about how this works than any of us members of the committee do. So,
I think we should bring up Ms. Zumberg and Ms. Gallagher. If you would come up, please. Welcome to the Tax Committee.
My name is Sue Zumberg. I manage Common Good Books here in St. Paul, one hill to the west. I have noticed some of our customers here. Before I start my prepared message, I would like to give you a perfect example of what we are talking about. You may or may not know that our store is owned by Garrison Keillor. Garrison has a new book coming out next month, a collection of sonnets. This is done by Prairie Home. They asked us to put a banner on our Common Good Books website saying that they could buy the book from us, but they could also click to Amazon. This is how ingrained this is in people's minds. When I called the person putting this together at Prairie Home and said, you know, I would rather not do a link to Amazon off of our bookstore site, she slapped her hands and said, oh, no, of course. But the difference here is if they ordered that book from our website, which would be fulfilled by our store, they would pay sales tax on it. If they bought that book from Amazon, not fulfilled by our store, they would not pay sales tax on it. That's what we mean when we talk about leveling the playing field in terms of sales tax in Minnesota. So that said, perhaps that helps clarify this a bit in your mind, and I'll go on with my prepared statement. I'm here on behalf of the Midwest Booksellers Association and the American Booksellers Association because internet sites such as Amazon and Abe Books and others are such obvious threats to the existence of an already threatened independent business. Each day when we sell a book at the store, we add on the appropriate sales tax to that sale, and each month we submit that tax to the state. We employ residents of Minnesota who in turn pay their income tax. We play by the rules set up in the tax code. We know that, just doing some research, the sales tax was established in the state of Minnesota in 1967, way before the internet ever had a presence. We know that a certain number of folks who come through our store are just browsing before they go home to their computer and then order the book which they saw at our store online. They buy the same product we offer and have it shipped to their homes in Minnesota, but that online retailer does not have to collect or remit state sales tax. The common wisdom is that they do not have to because they have no bricks and mortar establishment in the state. But they often sell, especially used, the stock of people who do live in our state, So in other words, they have sales agents in the state and therefore a nexus. Now, let me leave my prepared message one more time to explain a little bit better. If I have a customer, and we do have customers that are not tech savvy, and they come into the store and they want a book that's out of print, I will go on Amazon to order that book for them because they don't have the ability to do that or don't want to or for whatever reason. Now, I will see the same sites advertising on Amazon or ABE Books or eBay that are selling their stock of used books. Now, this may be out of their basement in Roseville. It could be out of a used bookstore in outstate Minnesota. When they are selling those to me, they do not have to pay a sales tax. And that's what we mean also by advertising. It's not just those click-throughs. When you put your stock up on Amazon, you can be a Minnesota company very much with bricks and mortar. You know, even if it is your house, you still have a physical presence in the state. So I just want to clear that up, too. There are other people who will give you numbers and statistics that overwhelmingly show the benefit of Bill 282, what it would be to our ailing state budget. But I would like to speak to the positive effect your support of this bill would have on independent businesses throughout our state, independent businesses that, quite frankly, do not feel the support of the state of Minnesota behind them often. Our store is located in an area of St. Paul, Selby Avenue, that 20 years ago was blighted. It was Selby and Dale area was known as an area that you did not want to go into. Until independent businesses took the gamble and went in, such as W.A. Foss and Paper Patisserie, and began the process of revitalization. Now Selby Avenue stands not for poverty, but for thriving residential, restaurant, and retail area. But this isn't just about our home-owned independents. It's also about the chain retail stores that have come into areas such as Grand Avenue and other vibrant retail areas in our state. They employ local workers, and they collect and remit sales tax. They also have taken a gamble to invest in our state. When folks go online to order from their warehouses, no matter if that warehouse is in this state or not, they also have to pay sales tax because of their bricks and mortar presence in our state. Our current sales tax laws were for the most part established before the age of the internet. The giant online retailers have somewhat ignored the sales tax laws of the states in which they sell, citing archaic court cases. That would be the Quill versus North Dakota court case, and that was 1992, the last time that there was a Supreme Court ruling on this. It is time that we clarify our sales tax nexus to reflect current technologies. And it's also important to point out that Bill 282 does not place new taxes on necessities such as food or clothing, nor on services that are not currently taxed. The bill provides for a $10,000 minimum, so the occasional seller on Craigslist or eBay will not be impacted. We are asking for a clear definition of our already existing sales tax laws to include those selling goods to the residents of Minnesota on the internet, to the benefit of everyone who lives in the state. Now, if I may, we were here Friday and waited, but we were unable to testify, and I would like to read the what another one of our Midwest Bookseller Association had prepared to say. And so I am now becoming Sally Wysick Wills.
And we know you were here and not able to, so feel free to.
Thank you. I was at the hearing last Thursday ready to testify. However, the hearing was postponed until today, and I am back in Park Rapids, unable to return. Hence, Sue Zumberg will read this for me. My husband and I own two independent bookstores in the Park Rapids area, Beagle Books and Sister Wolf Books. The stores are in Hubbard County, one of the poorer counties in our state. The retailers in our town have formed a downtown business association, which we are part of. In this association, we work together to keep our main street alive and to promote shopping locally. As you probably know, studies have shown that for every $100 spent at a local business, $70 stay in the community. In contrast, for every $100 spent at a chain store, only $40 stay in the community. However, we are experiencing a third group of retailers in our community. No money spent with these retailers stays in our community. They have no interest in our community. They do not provide jobs in the community. They do not pay property taxes in the community, and they do not collect sales tax. These are the retailers who are involved in e-commerce. Although many of them have a nexus in Minnesota, they do their business online. The failure of these companies to collect sales tax gives them an unfair advantage over those of us who do collect sales tax. In addition, our sales tax base is being eroded. I ask you to support Senate File 282. I believe this bill would provide a level playing field for retailers in our state in relationship to sales tax. In addition, collecting sales tax from the retailers who make sales in Minnesota would add a significant amount of money to our state treasury at a time when additional funds are badly needed. The University of Tennessee has recently conducted a study called State and Local Government Tax Revenue Losses from Electronic Commerce. I quote from a summary of the study. The rapid growth in e-commerce has had a profound effect on sales tax revenues. It has resulted in lost sales tax revenue for states, and it has put local retailers at a competitive disadvantage to e-commerce competitors as consumers browse Main Street, then make their purchases online to evade the tax. In 2003, New York State passed a budget which included an internet sales tax provision. Out-of-state retailers are now required to comply with New York State sales tax laws and collect and remit sales taxes on the sales to state residents. Over 30 online companies registered to do so. The state expects to collect about $68 million in the fiscal 2009-2010 year. $68 million. The proposed legislation would not raise taxes. It would, however, result in equitable enforcement of existing tax laws. As a taxpaying citizen of Minnesota and as a small business person trying to survive in greater Minnesota, I ask you to seriously consider this proposed bill. Thank you.
Ms. Gallagher.
I'm Katie Gallagher, Assistant Director of the Midwest Booksellers Association, which is the regional trade association representing more than 200 independent bookstores, 87 of which are in Minnesota. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that University of Tennessee study. The study reports that in Minnesota alone, the total state and local sales tax revenue losses from e-commerce sales were more than $159 million in 2008. And predicts that this will increase to more than $235 million by 2012. Because of this decline, which will only grow worse as online shopping continues its robust growth, Minnesota's citizens are the primary losers, as potential tax revenue is uncollected, monies that fund such essential services as schools and first responders. This is a significant issue as our state faces a mid-year 2009 budget gap estimated to be $654 million, and as we look at a projected 2010 budget gap of more than $3 billion. The source for those numbers was the Nelson A. Rockefeller Institute of Government. Further, failure to equitably enforce existing state sales tax laws critically handicaps state retailers who play by the rules. And studies have shown that locally owned businesses have far greater positive economic impact on their communities and are largely responsible for our communities retaining their unique characteristics. By unfairly enforcing sales tax laws, our state will, in effect, force an increasing number of in-state businesses to cut tax and to close each year, meaning the decline in revenue from sales, personal, and corporate income taxes will simply accelerate.
Thank you. Questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I understand the argument, and I very much want this, you know, at some point to be done on a national basis. But is the issue, and I guess the question is for Ms. Zumberg, the issue is you aren't necessarily wanting to put this advertisement on your website, but the publisher wants the exposure, I'm assuming, and sell more books that way.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Ms. Summers.
Okay. So you're doing it kind of.
I'm not doing it. I refuse to do it.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
I mean, it really boils down to a clear case of independent businesses who have or any business that has a physical presence in the state is being penalized by having to pay sales tax.
No.
I mean, you know, you can dance around this any way you want to, but if you want to save some money, you know, 70 cents on the dollar or 7 cents on the dollar, you can buy online and not here.
No, Mr. Chairman, I do understand that. I do understand. I mean, I used to, you could go to New York City and buy clothes, and I think the sales tax was, with the city, was 8%+. And if you had them mailed back to Minnesota, you didn't owe a sales tax. You did owe a use tax, but we know how that goes.
Well, you know. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to get too far away from the real issue at hand. The issue is the non-Minnesota company has a contractual relationship with the Minnesota company.
Mm-hmm.
Contractual relationship, and then when the out-of-state seller sells something, they pay a commission back to that Minnesota business. So there is, I mean, there's nexus there. There is a fiscal presence through the Minnesota company acting essentially as a sales agent when they receive a commission.
May I also clear up one other thing explain one other thing? I don't know if I'll clear it up, but I have a number of friends who sell used books from their home. And they go to Goodwill, pick up the books, or rummage sales, and then they post their stock online. They're just doing this out of their basements or their dens or whatever. They might charge $1 for that book, which is really, I mean, that's a whole other subject, but drop the market out of used book sales totally. But then they will charge a postage and handling fee, sometimes regulated by the online site where they're posting their stock, sometimes not. And the real money actually is in that shipping and handling. It might cost you 50 cents to ship, but you've charged, you know, $5.50 in terms of shipping and handling. That's not going to be taxed. It is only the physical sale of that book that will be taxed. The rest of that we are just assuming is going to be claimed on as income by these people. But again, you have a $10,000 minimum here. So those people who are making some extra money for vacation or whatever are not going to be penalized by this.
Thank you. Let's hear from the other folks that are here to testify. Thank you, Ms. Gallagher.
Thank you,
Ms. Sumberger.
Thank you.
Ms. Berg, Mr. Meisner, and Mr. Hesse. Ms. Berg, not here. Mr. Meisner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also hear was on Thursday, and so I'll have an adequate opportunity to make my case. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Paul Meisner, and I am Amazon.com's Vice President for Global Public Policy. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today about SF-282, which Amazon respectfully opposes. Please note that the approach of 282 also is opposed by dozens of other organizations, either directly or through associations. These opponents include AOL, AT&T, Comcast, eBay, Expedia, Google, Overstock, and Yahoo, as well as a host of associations. In summary, Mr. Chair, SF-282 would provide no new sales use tax revenue collected by Amazon or others who discontinue advertising in Minnesota. It would deny Minnesota-based organizations advertising fees they currently receive from out-of-state retailers. It would encourage other states to adopt identical laws harmful to Minnesota retailers and undermine the streamlined sales tax project, which Minnesota is a full participant. But let me get to each of those points. Mr. Chair, 282 and its companion bill, HF-201, would require sellers without a physical presence in Minnesota to collect sales use tax on all their sales into the state merely on the basis of contracts with Minnesota-based advertisers. This is unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court in 1967 Bellis-Hess and 1992 Quill decisions holds that the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution requires physical presence for the, quote, substantial nexus necessary for a state to require sellers to collect sales use tax. Mere advertising in a state is not enough to meet the Quill bright line test. Not to diminish any other part of the Constitution, of course, but I note here that interstate commerce is no backwater of the document. Indeed, federal regulation of commerce, the issue at stake in 282, was at the core of one of the most important negotiations of the Philadelphia Convention. Last year, New York passed a law nearly identical to SF 282. Amazon decided to maintain its relationships with New York-based advertisers and thus began collecting sales use tax while simultaneously suing the state to challenge the law's constitutionality. Overstock.com, another large online retailer lacking physical presence in New York, also sued, but instead of maintaining its business practices, Overstock severed its ties with New York-based advertisers and has not collected any sales use tax for New York. Still, other out-of-state retailers, including Eden Prairie, Minnesota-based ShopNBC.com, without suing, simply cut off their New York-based advertisers and do not collect New York State sales tax. So here you have an important Minnesota-based company that, as a practical matter, cannot advertise its products in New York just because of a law like SF 282. Dozens of other out-of-state sellers took the same course. Rather than collect the sales use tax, they stopped advertising in New York. As for the Amazon Overstock court case, the New York trial court, which is counterintuitively named the Supreme Court, dismissed the challenge. In February, both Amazon and Overstock appealed to the New York Court of Appeals, that state's highest court. And sorry to say, a final decision there or in the U.S. Supreme Court may be years away. Amazon's retail business, just like Minnesota-based retailers, including Common Good Books, collects sales and use tax where there is a legally required physical presence. For example, Amazon collects tax on sales into North Dakota, while Common Good Books does not. Amazon advertises in Minnesota via independent in-state website advertisers known at Amazon as, quote, associates. Other companies with similar programs, like Eden Prairie ShopNBC.com, call their website advertisers, quote, affiliates. To be clear, our associates are not corporate affiliates. Amazon neither owns nor controls them, nor are they agents of Amazon. Indeed, many simultaneously advertise for one or more of our competitors. And they are not significantly associated with Amazon's ability to establish and maintain a market in Minnesota. The way these Amazon advertising relationships works is as follows. Minnesota-based participants in the Amazon Associates program place Amazon advertisements on their websites and then are compensated by Amazon for purchases made by visitors whom they refer to Amazon's website. Amazon associates that make more referrals receive more fees. So, for example, the Northfield, Minnesota-based organization BestToysGuide.com tests, reviews, and advertises kids' toys and has links on its website to Amazon's website where the toys can be purchased. If a visitor to BestToysGuide.com clicks through to Amazon's website and makes a purchase, Amazon compensates BestToysGuide.com with a referral fee. Moreover, SF 282 is written so broadly that it would cover advertising on other Minnesota-based media, including billboards, television, radio, cable TV, newspapers, etc. According to SF 282, an out-of-state seller would be presumed to have sales use tax collection nexus, quote, if it enters into an agreement with a Minnesota resident under which the resident, for consideration, directly or indirectly refers potential customers, whether by a link or otherwise, to the seller. Again, this presumption describes all advertising through any medium. The New York law, which SF 282 copies nearly verbatim, almost certainly was drafted this broadly in an attempt to comply with the Federal Internet Tax Freedom Act, which prohibits discriminatory taxes on internet commerce. To put it plainly, if 282 were enacted, out-of-state sellers that advertise through any Minnesota-based media will be exposed to sales use tax collection nexus, and any media in the state that rely on advertising by out-of-state sellers have income at risk. Amazon's response. Well, Amazon would prefer to maintain its advertising relationships in Minnesota with Minnesota-based associates. And that's why I'm here opposing SF 282. But in New York, we already have our first lawsuit on this issue, and we do not want our company subjected to yet another state's unconstitutional law. Thus, if SF 282 were enacted, Amazon would have little choice but to end our advertising relationships with Minnesota-based participants in the Associates program. What then would be the overall result of passing 282? Well, beyond the potentially significant litigation expenses to the state, there would be four key results. First, 282 would provide no new sales use tax revenue collected by Amazon or others who discontinue advertising in Minnesota. The department's revenue estimate specifically assumes that companies like Amazon would maintain their current business practices. As I indicated earlier, Amazon decided to maintain its advertising relationships with New York-based participants in the Associates Program. But while Amazon would continue to serve our Minnesota buyer customers, we would have little choice but to end our relationship with Minnesota-based associates. Second, 282 would deny Minnesota-based organizations advertising fees they currently receive from out-of-state sellers. Beyond the traditional media and websites already described, SF-282 would diminish income of Minnesota-based support groups, churches, professional organizations, choirs, and public radio. If a North Dakota bookstore member of the Minneapolis-based Midwest Booksellers Association buys a banner ad on the MBA website, then SF-282 could expose that North Dakota bookstore to sales tax collection responsibilities in Minnesota. So the MBA and other Minnesota-based advertisers can expect less advertising income from out-of-state retailers. Third, SF-282 would encourage other states to adopt identical laws harmful to Minnesota retailers. As already noted, a Minnesota-based company, ShopNBC.com, no longer advertises in New York as a result of New York's law like 282. Do Minnesota retailers who support or do not oppose SF-282 recognize that they likely will be subject to the same treatment for their out-of-state sales? It's noteworthy that Minnesota-based retailers, some of whom call for tax fairness in this context, only collect sales tax in states where they have a physical presence. That is, they behave just like the out-of-state sellers targeted by 282. For example, important Minnesota retailers like Bachman's, Norby's, the UFA Shop, and Common Good Books have websites through which they collect tax only on sales to Minnesota residents. Unlike Amazon, when they sell to North Dakota residents, they do not collect sales use tax for Bismarck. The point is not that these Minnesota companies are doing anything wrong, rather that they, like Amazon, are acting in accord with and in reliance on the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Constitution. As FS-282 were enacted, these Minnesota businesses could be exposed to similar unconstitutional legislation in other states. For example, the Minnesota bookstores Books Revisited in St. Cloud and Southern Minnesota Books in St. Peter have sold tens of thousands of books through eBay's website. These bookstores do not currently collect tax on sales to buyers outside Minnesota, including to California. However, a bill practically identical to 282 has been introduced in the California Assembly. If enacted, and because eBay is a resident of California, the California version of 282 would expose these and other Minnesota bookstores to tax collection responsibilities on sales to California residents. Amazon and other organizations strongly opposed bills like 282 in California and other states. But if Minnesota were to enact 282, this opposition could become more difficult to the risk of Minnesotans. We hope that, at least for the sake of Minnesota businesses, Minnesota instead will join Maryland in rejecting this kind of legislation. Fourth and finally, 282 would undermine the streamlined sales tax project in which Minnesota is a full participant. Multi-state simplification and harmonization of sales use tax codes is the constitutionally permissible way to approach mandatory collection by out-of-state sellers. Amazon has long been a constructive participant in the Multi-State Streamlined Sales Tax Project, SSTP, and Minnesota is a fully conforming member. This committee even just last Thursday favorably considered SF-1708, a resolution from Senator Rest and others that would confirm the legislature's support for SSTP. If bills like 282 pass, however, SSTP would be undermined. What incentive will other states have to make the tax rule changes that Minnesota already has made? It is no surprise there, therefore, that the approach proposed in 282 is opposed by the NCSL, the Council on State Taxation, and the Business Advisory Council to the SSTP. All of these groups strongly support SSTP, and again, all of them oppose the approach of 282. In conclusion, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Amazon respectfully opposes SF-282, which would provide no new sales tax revenue collected by Amazon or others who discontinue advertising in Minnesota, would deny Minnesota-based organizations advertising fees they currently receive from out-of-state retailers, would encourage other states to adopt identical laws harmful to Minnesota retailers, and would undermine the streamlined sales tax project in which Minnesota is a full participant. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I welcome your questions.
Before we go to questions, Mr. Hesse, Mr. Meisner didn't leave a lot of time for you, but why don't you go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And just let me state at the beginning here that the Chamber's retail members do want the issue of the taxation of remote sales addressed, and it's part of been part of our policy for many years to support the efforts of the Streamline Sales Tax Project. But we believe that legislation like this could derail those simplification efforts, as was just noted by Mr. Meisner. So the Chamber really opposes this legislation and has two primary concerns with it. First, as already described, it's likely unconstitutional because of the Quill decision requires physical presence in the state in order to compel a remote seller to collect and remit the tax. We believe this legislation is contrary to Quill. And second, we just believe that a better alternative than legislation like this is to continue to work through the Streamlined Sales Tax Project and in Congress to then overturn the Quill decision. The Minnesota Chamber, again, has supported efforts of the Streamlined Sales Tax Project and were supporters early on when the Department of Revenue proposed conformity with the Streamlined Sales Tax. So, again, we would like to see this addressed, but it's appropriately addressed at the national level, not at the state level. And maybe just a couple of other comments that just to reiterate it and highlight some of the things that Mr. Meisner said. We believe that there is a good reason for this, for many of the groups, the national groups that are currently opposed to this legislation, like the Council on State Taxation, the Business Advisory Council of the SSTP. And again, those groups all want to see the issue of remote sales resolved, but resolved in a way that can address not just a small segment of the taxation of remote sales, but the broader issue. And my fear is that by passing a narrow bill such as this, we the state would potentially address a smaller slice of sales tax revenue that could be generated, but put in jeopardy in the long run a much larger piece of sales tax revenue that the previous testifiers talked about earlier. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but again, we support efforts, national efforts, to resolve the issue of the sales tax of remote sales, but feel this legislation just does not move us in that direction and could be counter to it. And if possible, Lee Anderson from General Mills would also like to address this issue and on the impact of his company. If there's time, he would like to address the committee.
Well, I think we'll do questions. We have session at 11, so we're going to questions. Yeah. Senator Bach?
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, maybe we could give Mr. Anderson like a minute.
Mr. Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lee Anderson with General Mills, and our issue is was one that was brought to my attention very recently. We have a couple of websites that would be impacted by this. I provided a copy of this to Senator Bach, and I'll pass it around to the chair. Box Tops for Education, all of you might be familiar with. It's a program that's been around for over 12 years and has raised over $300 million for schools across the United States. Box Tops runs a website called Box Tops Marketplace. Here you can take that, but you can see all the retailers that are linked through that. That's an example of one of those sites that we talked about. Senator Bach correctly points out we have a contractual relationship with those businesses. Our Box Tops membership, that is the parents and students that are participants in Box Tops and raising dollars for their schools, we have over 2.2 million that go onto our website, collect Box Tops for their school, and one of the tools that they can use is the Marketplace site. Of course, if they come through the Box Tops website, click through to one of the online retailers, there's over 70 popular online retailers on that site, a portion of that purchase is donated to their school. We're concerned that if this legislation were to be enacted, a number of those retailers would no longer participate in that program because, of course, they do not have physical nexus in Minnesota. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman,
I'm struck because the consumer pays the tax.
That's correct.
So I'm not sure why, and retailers are quite accustomed to collecting that tax and remitting it. Is it just that your presence, Mr. Meisner, is in 50 states? Where is your physical presence? the company.
Mr. Meisner.
Yes, Senator. In Washington State, North Dakota, Kansas, and Kentucky.
Do those states have sales taxes?
I'm sorry,
Mr. Chairman. Do those states have sales taxes?
Yes, ma'am.
They all three do.
So we do collect on sales into North Dakota.
Mr. Meisner.
That's sufficient, yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shea.
So if you compensate for sales from Minnesota, you have no problem tracking those sales. I mean, you know how much is being sold to Minnesota if you're paying your advertising space or for your advertising space. So there's no problem in tracking it, right? The issue is just you just don't want to be collecting taxes, I suppose. Is that?
Mr. Meisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. We, Amazon, just don't want to be subject to an unconstitutional law. This is important to us.
Senator Shea.
Mr. Chairman, you know, Bellis, Hess, and Quill aside, I mean, I think that those were, well, 92 was Quill, I guess. But Bellis, Hess was certainly before, you know, I was going online and ordering from Amazon, for example. But it troubles me a lot. And you commented on discriminatory taxes on e-commerce, but I think the discrimination is against our retailers. You know, so Senator Bach, I kind of like what you're doing. I understand the concerns. I just clipped my box top for education from my Cocoa Puffs yesterday morning, okay?
Thank you, Senator.
But you know, I've never been to this website, so I have to look.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, from the statistics I have, e-commerce retail sales have grown from 2000 to 2006 by 23%. More and more businesses are selling their stuff online, entering into contractual relationships with companies like Amazon. And you go to a Minnesota company's website to make a purchase, and if you use Amazon, the Minnesota company gets a commission, but the sales tax isn't paid. There is a contractual relationship, which I would argue creates tax nexus.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I agree with your effort here to try and find other ways to raise revenues. And I think it's well-intended, but I'm concerned about our relying upon revenue for balancing our budget if we know we're going to end up in a constitutional challenge over that new tax. And so maybe we want to go forward with it for a test case, but I think we should be cautious before we rely on revenue that might be subject to creating more of a problem than less. So maybe go forward, but watch what might happen and not depend on it to balance the budget.
Senator Bachman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, if this bill passes into law, those businesses are going to have to register with the Department of Revenue and collect the sales tax, or they will not. It'll be the law. I mean, they can decide not to do business here. I just would argue that if I'm looking to buy a toaster, and I want to buy it online, I'm going to buy it online. Whether some companies make a decision to not do business in Minnesota doesn't change my need to buy a new toaster. So I'm not sure if some companies decide that they're just not going to market to Minnesota is going to change the fact that Minnesotans are still looking to make some purchase. And the sales tax is going to get collected. So, but I think the issue, Senator Ortman, is if we pass this into law, the money will get collected.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Senator Bach, that may be true for a while until they stop doing this type of business, as we just talked about. And I worry, how do we put together a test case without having that consequence in Minnesota? And I think we should think long and hard before we rely on that revenue and see if there is some way to do a test case that doesn't create some unintended consequences.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe that's happening in New York. And their lawsuit will get to the Supreme Court likely faster than Minnesota's would in the event the Minnesota law is challenged.
And Senator Ortman, the notes that I wrote on my sheet when I was listening to the testimony were that, I mean, yes, Amazon might not advertise here, but Minnesotans are still going to buy stuff. And if they're not advertising here, we can have an analysis of whether the advertising had any impact on whether they buy from Amazon or not. But Minnesotans are still going to buy stuff online. And, you know, if they buy from Amazon and this law is in place, well, then they'll collect it. But they just won't be advertising. That's the only difference I see.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Mr. Meyer.
The other difference, of course, is that we would not be collecting the sales tax. So there would be no new sales tax revenue coming from Amazon under this law.
From your company. There might be other companies.
True. We are by far the largest.
Anything else, members? We're under call on the floor, so Chair's going to lay Senate File 282 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, members. No. Committee's adjourned. Yeah.